We are going this week to take chapter 16, 17, and 18. And you know, after today, there'll be only three more sessions. And I have two of them that I want to be sure to get. I'm going to spend a week, one of our sessions, on Proverbs 22:6. And I'm calling that Wounded Parents. And then the last subject, or the last lesson, will be in chapters 30 and 31, a little in 30, and then most of it in 31. And here Solomon sort of makes up to you ladies for all that he said about you and charged you with at times, and showing you the model of a woman that is really the precious stone or the precious gift that God has given to the husband. Okay, in Proverbs 16, verse 9, a man's heart plans his way, but the Lord directs his steps. Someone has said that man plans, but God disbands. And we know that oftentimes what we plan is not what God plans for us. You know, I mentioned that Edgar Guest was a poet for the common people here in America. Over in Scotland, you have Bobby Burns, sort of their home folks, a poet. And one day he was plowing a field and plowed up a little rat's nest, field rat's nest. And here those rats go scurrying in every direction. And then he thought about a poem after that and many stanzas to it. But almost in all of his poems, he has a quotable statement in it. And in that, he has one statement that applies to this verse. He said, "But little mouse, you're not alone in proving foresight may be vain. The best laid plans of mice and men often go astray and leave us nothing but grief and pain for promised joy." And of course, James speaks very plainly concerning that in James chapter 4, verses 13 through 15. He says, "Come now, you who say today or tomorrow we'll go to such and such a city, spend a year there, buy and sell, and make a profit, whereas you do not know what will happen tomorrow. For what is your life? It is even a vapor that appears for a little time and then vanishes away. Instead, you ought to have said, 'If the Lord wills, we shall live and do this and do that.'" You know, back long ago, almost everyone signed a letter at the end with three initials, IGW, "If God wills." This is what we want, what we're going to do, and all of that, "If God wills." And let us never leave that out of our minds, even though we may not speak it in every prayer, that all of this is if God is willing. And I close my prayer to the Father in private with the expression, "Father, if these things are according to your will, I offer this petition in the name of Jesus Christ, your beloved Son." So man plans, but always overshadowed with God's plans. Then look in verse 26. "Pleasant words are like a honeycomb, sweetness to the soul and health to the bones." You know, there's no member of the body that is spoken about so far as its unruliness as the tongue. In Proverbs 18:21, he says, "Life and death are in the power of the tongue, and those who love it will eat its fruit." You know, James says, the tongue is an unruly member, and no one can tame it. Well, we can't tame it, but we can control it. When you think about something's tame, well, you can let it go now on its own, but never can you do that with the tongue. God put it way back in here with two gates, teeth and lips, to hold it back. And so we need to be careful with the use of our tongues, because sometimes we may speak words that we regret but will never come back. And you know, you say something that is ugly to people and then say, oh, pardon me. And they may pardon you, but it'll be a long time before they forget it. So guard your speech ever so carefully. Then in Proverbs 16:34, the silver-haired head is a crown of glory. It is found if it is found in the way of righteousness. You know, the white hair symbolizing old age, and old age is good, providing it's righteous. So a bad white-haired individual is just as evil as one without hair or one with jet black hair. But with our age, we must have along with that not just the experience of years, but also to have righteousness. Then in verse 32, he who is slow to anger is better than the mighty, and he who rules the spirit than he who takes the city. You know, Alexander of Macedon, usually referred to as Alexander the Great, is regarded as one of the greatest military leaders in the world. And he became the head of Macedon when his father was assassinated back in 336 B.C. He was only 20 years old. And so he set out not just to conquer Greece, but to conquer the world. And he first had to stake his claim and prove it that he was fit to be the king of Macedon. And then from this city-state, he went out to the others and conquered all of them. And some writers say that he had borrowed $3 million when he to start his campaign, and he used all of that conquering Greece. But then when he had finished that, he called in his four generals and took all of his personal property and divided it up, and he gave a piece to each one of them. And one of his generals said, "Why, Alexander, you have left nothing for yourself." He said, "Oh, yes, I have. I have my hopes." And he started out with his hopes, and of course, one of the first great battles, he caught the king unaware, and Xerxes left his family and left, importantly, the pay wagon. You know, they didn't have banks, so they had to carry their gold along with them to be able to buy things and furnish the army. But anyway, when he was only 32, or some say 33, he had conquered the world, but he couldn't conquer himself. He had a great affinity for liquor, and his drinking was legendary. And he had a time when the other things were gone that he challenged one of his generals to a drinking match. And the general beat him. Well, he couldn't stand anyone to beat him. So as soon as he sobered up, said, "Okay, let's try that again." And this time, he beat his general. But 2 days later, he died. The alcohol had stopped his breathing and ended his life. So better to control your spirit than to take a walled city or take the world. So we have to have that self-control. And sometimes one that has a temper flies off the handle and says, "Oh, that's the way I'm made. I can't help it." Yes, you can help it. And later, I have a story to show you how one learned to keep it. But going on, in verse 32, let's go down into 17 now. Chapter 17, verse 1. Better is a dry morsel than a house full of feasting with strife. Let me tell you about my Aunt Leeler. She was one of the finest cooks you'll find anywhere. And if you get her in the summertime, you have fresh tomatoes and you have fresh onions, fresh cucumbers, and then name the vegetables: black-eyed peas, butter beans, snap beans, and fried okra. Then you have ham and chicken, all of that laid out. But I was afraid to compliment our food. Because if you ever did, without mistake, she would then go in to tell you how hard she worked, how long she worked, and then tell how George, her husband, Uncle George, wouldn't help her. And the time you got through, you felt like you ought to leave a $10 tip there at the table when you got up. But it's better to have little and feel like it's a good thing. In another place, Solomon says, now, if someone invites you to eat and says, if he's a greedy man, guard and be careful how much you'll eat. He'll say, eat anything you want, but said his heart is not in it. I remember Willard Willis saying that he was at a place one time in a meeting during World War II. Butter was very scarce. And the lady sat where she could just reach the refrigerator door. And she said, oh, I forgot the butter. She reached in, brought it out, said, butter, butter, anyone have the butter? If no one wants the butter, I'll put the butter up back in before anyone could get at it. Well, I'd say that she wasn't given with a free heart. But God bless Aunt Leela. But I tell you, I did hate to hear all that, how early she got up and how she had picked these beans, these, so forth, all of that. And she did it, and I appreciated the food, but I'd rather have half that much and half less work on her part. Proverbs 17, verse 4. An evildoer gives heed to false lips. A liar listens eagerly to a spiteful tongue. Now hold that in mind, and I'd like to read an extensive reading from Romans 1, 28 through 32, and a special emphasis on the last sentence. Paul says of the Greek world, even as they did not like to retain God in their knowledge, God gave them over to a debased mind to do things which are not fitting, being filled with all unrighteousness, sexual immorality, wickedness, covetousness, maliciousness, full of envy, murder, strife, deceits, evil-mindedness. They are whisperers, backbiters, haters of God, violent, proud, boasters, inventors of evil things, disobedient to parents, undiscerning, untrustworthy, unloving, unforgiving, unmerciful, who knowing the righteous judgment of God, that those who practice such things are deserving of death. Now listen to this. Not only do the same, but also approve of those who practice them. And so here's gossip going around. And then here's evil talk, and one eagerly listens for the gossip and passes it on. Well, Solomon says the one who listens to and passes it on is just as guilty as the gossiper originator. And so let us not pass on these things. Let us not practice the evil of passing on the evil on others. Then verse 5, he who mocks the poor reproaches his maker. He who is glad at calamity will not go unpunished. Now, you think about it a minute. Here's someone that's really done you wrong. And then something bad happens to him. It's hard not to think, well, he's getting what he deserves. But Solomon says, don't be glad when someone has hurt you, gets hurt himself. He says in chapter 24, 17, do not rejoice when your enemy falls, and do not let your heart be glad when he stumbles. And then again, Job, in that famous Job 31, where he talks of if I've done this, well then let bad happen to me. He says in verses 29 and 30, if I've rejoiced at the destruction of him who hated me, or lifted up myself when he found him, or when they found him, or when evil found him, said, indeed, I have not allowed my mouth to sin by asking for a curse, on his soul. So Job says, I have never rejoiced when my enemy had bad times. I have never asked anything bad to happen to him because of what he had done to me. That's not easy, that's hard. In verse 9, he who covers a transgression seeks love, but he who repeats the matter separates friends. You know, I've said before you pass on something that you hear that's not good, ask yourself, number one, is it true? Number two, will it help? And number three, is it kind? And if it can't pass those tests, stop it right where you are. Don't be one to pass it on to another. Then in 17, verse 14, the beginning of strife is like releasing water. Therefore, stop covetousness before a quarrel begins. Randy Lowery was the former president of Lipscomb. Before being at Lipscomb, he was a member of the Pepperdine Law Faculty. And while there, he started a reconciliation company that the college allowed him to do this on the side. And that was when companies or groups were having trouble, they'd ask Randy to come in and try to give them some guidelines as how to keep all of that strife down. And while he was there, he said that there was a Jewish company, six Jews that were partners in the company, and they were constantly at each other's throat. And so they heard about his reconciliation and hired him to come over. And Randy said, well, I will just watch and listen for 3 days, and then we'll meet in the boardroom, and I'll give you the suggestions that I have. And that was agreeable. So he was there for 3 days, and then on the third day, they all came together in the boardroom, and Randy says, well, I have three suggestions, actually, that I think you ought to. He had seen how that one have a matter with another, and here he go telling everybody except the one he had the matter with it. He said, number one, if one partner has something against another partner, he goes to that partner and tries to settle the matter. Number two, if he can't do that, he gets another partner, tells him, and the two of them go to him and try to settle it. Then number three, if the three can't do it, well, then take it to the whole six of you to decide the matter. And the oldest partner and the chairman of the group said, hey, that's a wonderful, wonderful suggestion. Said, Randy, where'd you come up with that? And he said, well, actually, it's not mine. Jesus gave it in Matthew 18. And he said, I like that. He said, I move that we pass the Jesus resolution. And so those six Jews passed the Jesus resolution. You go to the one you have ought against, take one with you, and then only last take it to the whole group. Well, if we can stop the contention before it gets spread all through an organization, well, then it's just like stopping water of a dam before it splits and breaks. Okay, passing on to the next. Bad to be old and have to wet your thumb to turn your pages. Okay, verse 17. A friend loves at all times, and a brother is born for adversity. You know, I like the definition of a friend as being one who walks in when everybody else walks out. One that will stay with you regardless of what it is. Proverbs 18:24, a man who has friends must himself be friendly. There is a friend who sticks closer than a brother. And then verse 22 in chapter 17, a merry heart does good like medicine, but a broken spirit dries the bones. You know, when David had sinned with Bathsheba, he killed her husband in order to keep it quiet. And during that quiet time, or at least he thought it was quiet, of course God knew and God was looking. But David said, I kept silence. But in Psalms 32, verses 3 and 4, he says, when I kept silence, my bones wasted away through my groaning all the day long. For day and night thy hand was heavy upon me. My moisture was changed as with the drought of summer. So he said, I just dried up because I kept silence. And so it is that a broken spirit drives the bones. Then in verse 27, he who has knowledge spares his words, and a man of understanding is of a calm spirit. Solomon also wrote this in Ecclesiastes 5, verse 2. Do not be rash with your mouth, and let not your heart utter anything hastily before God. For God is in heaven, and you on the earth. Therefore, let your words be few. Very, very great wisdom. Okay, then coming on over into chapter 18, and let me see if we have time, we'll go into chapter 19. Proverbs 18, verse 2. A fool has no delight in understanding, but in expressing his own heart. Have you ever been in a discussion class, and when you really wanted to ask someone who was sort of taking over the class, said, do you have something you need to say, or do you just need to say something? And sometimes a discussion class can devolve into a free exchange of ignorance. And do you need to say something vital to add to this, or just have a need for talking and adding words to it? Well, it takes wisdom to know. Before destruction, the heart of a man is haughty, and before honor is humility. You know, George Washington Carver was a scientist that had been brought to Tuskegee Institute. Or rather, he asked by Booker T. Washington. And Booker T. has quite a story. You know, someone told him about this college up in Virginia. And he walked 400 miles to Hampton, Virginia to go to school. He had no money. He had heard they will let you have schooling without, if you're willing to work. He said when he got there, he went to the dean's office and said where he's from and that he wanted to go to school, but he didn't have any money. The dean said, I'm busy right now. Go in there and clean that room. And so he went in and he swept it, he mopped it, he dusted it, and then still the dean didn't come. So he went back over and did it again. And the dean then came in and looked at the room and said, well, I can give you some work. But anyway, while he was president there at the Tuskegee Institute, now Tuskegee University, he brought in this brilliant scientist, Booker T. Washington. Booker T. invented 67 ways to use a potato. They could grow potatoes, and so he wanted his people to be able to have variety, and he experimented and did that and was a remarkable scientist and a world-known scientist. And they had a lot of admirers in the company. So they wanted to have a special banquet in Chicago honoring Booker T. Washington. And those who were invited to come had to pay an extra fee, and this was going to support the Tuskegee Institute. Well, Booker T. got there early, went up, settled in his room, came back down and just stood out at the front of the hotel watching folks go by. And here a limousine pulled up, and this haughty man got out of it and said, "Come here, boy, grab my bags." And Booker T went over and picked up the bags, and he carried them in and said, "Wait right there, and I want you to take them up to the room for me." And so when they got ready here, they went up to the room. Booker T set them down and said, "Thank you, boy," and gave him a $2 tip. When I think about the chagrin of that man that night, when Booker T came in and walked up on the stage, everybody stood and gave him a thunderous applause. And then he says, "That's the one I call my boy. Had him carry my suitcase for me." But a humble spirit comes before, our humility comes before honor. But he had a humble spirit. Proverbs 18, verse 12. "He who answers a matter before he hears it, it is folly and a shame to him." And then adding to that, in Proverbs 18, 17, "The first one to plead the cause seems right until his neighbor comes and examines him." You remember Paul Harvey always had the rest of the story. And before we make up our minds, we need to hear the rest of the story. When someone comes to you with a complaint about what has happened to them, obviously that individual is prejudiced toward himself. But just wait until you get the whole story, until you make up your mind as to what the solution should be. So Solomon says, if you answer before you hear the whole matter, well, it's a folly to you and a shame to you. Okay, Proverbs 18, verse 19. "A brother offended is harder to win than a strong city, and contentions are like the bars of a council." You know, most of our contentions come from our discussions. And we get into a discussion with the individual, and often that gets heated, and then maybe folks begin to take sides and all. Ben Franklin, the American patriot, said when he was a boy and young man that he had many arguments or discussions. And he said, "I noticed I won almost every one of them, but I never won the man." And then he said, "I decided to change my approach. That when I had an argument to make, I would approach it like this. Said, what do you think? Could this be this? Or what is your opinion of this?" And you know, I've noticed that if you're discussing something with someone, you want to win them over. Don't pin them in the corner. Because often to save face and for prevent embarrassment, one who has stated a position, if you challenge him on it and push him on it, why, it makes it harder and harder for him to change. And that's just part of our human nature. Brother R.C. White, I don't know how many of you knew him, but years ago, I remember him telling about some fellows up in Tennessee that were discussing their horses and what great horses they had. And one old gentleman said, "My horse is 15 feet high." And someone said, "Uncle, I believe you meant 15 hands high, didn't you?" He thought a minute and said, "Yes, I guess I did, but I got my word out, 15 feet high." And so you push them, and they have to hold on to their argument. But if you do know, what do you think, could it be possible, other kinds of approaches, if you actually want to win the individual rather than put him down, why, there are a lot of approaches that are better than just saying, "You said, you said, you said." Okay. Then again, in Proverbs 18, verse 24, "A man who has friends must himself be friendly, But there is a friend who sticks closer than a brother. You remember some time ago we read Dale Carnegie's statements on how to win friends. Actually, Solomon has advice on how to win friends. It seems to me there are four principles that he sets forth. The first one in Proverbs 18, verse 21. He who would have friends must himself be friendly. If you want to win friends, be a friend. And one of the great things of an approachable individual is a good smile. And so you first start out being a friend. Then, number two, you must be kind. Proverbs 19:22. What is desired in a man is kindness. So be a friend, be kind. And then number three, Proverbs 17:17, a friend loves at all times. You've got to be faithful. And so there are three. And then number four, chapter 27, verse 17, as iron sharpens iron, so a man sharpens the countenance of his friends. You know, a real friend will tell you what you need to hear and not just what you want to hear. There's a case in the family of David that illustrates this point. There was a man by the name of Amnon, who was one of David's sons, who thought he was madly in love with his half-sister, Tamar. They had the same father, different mothers. And Amnon could not do anything with the virgin daughters. David had those virgin daughters guarded very carefully, and they would not allow anyone to come in. Well, here Amnon was. He was just pining away. And it says that he had a friend by the name of Jonadab. And that was a very clever individual. And Jonadab said, now look, let me tell you what you do. You go and get in bed, pretend to be sick, and let that word get to the king, and then he'll come to see you. You know, David had 25 sons plus daughters. I believe maybe 37 in all of his children, but it seems like the only time he had time to see one of his children, it was if that child was sick. That's something I'm going to deal with in chapter, or when we discuss 22:6. Well, Jonadab said, now you do that. And then when he comes, tell David that you want Tamar to come over to your apartment and to bake you some bread and give it to you. Well, the king had no suspicion at all, so he sent word to Tamar, go to Amnon's apartment and bake him some bread, fix him some food. And so when she had done that, why, she said, it's ready. And he said, all of you others, get out. And then he said to Tamar, bring it in and feed it to me. Well, you know the story. She brought it in, and then he raped her. And then ordered her out of the house. And she said, what you're doing now is worse than the other. Well, no. But this girl happened to be Absalom's full sister. They had the same father and the same mother. And so she went to Absalom's house. She tore her garment that the king had given to her and then went to Absalom's house and stayed with him, desolate the rest of her life. And Absalom made it as though it was no big deal. And so he said, did Amnon do this? She said, yes. He said, oh, it's in the family. Don't worry about it. But that day he hated Amnon. And that day Amnon sealed his own death warrant. Absalom waited 2 years. Most of the others had forgotten about what had happened. But not Absalom. Absalom had a feast and invited all the king's sons there and had his men positioned, said, "When I give the word, kill Amnon." And some that were there came running to David, says, "Absalom has killed all your children." Well, wasn't true. He killed only Amnon. And this same Jonadab that was supposed to be the friend of Amnon, he said, "Oh, it's just Amnon. He's had this in his mind ever since Amnon raped Tamar." And so to have a friend like that is a terrible thing. But to have a friend that'll tell you what you need to know rather than what you want to hear is a friend that'll sharpen your countenance. And this is a friend you can stay with, you can stick with. And it's hard to find friends like that. Well, let me see. We still have 3 or 4 minutes. Let me do at least one here in chapter 19. Okay, in verse 19, verse 5. "A false witness will not go unpunished, and he who speaks lies will not escape." Well, how many times do they say in politics, it's not the deal but the cover-up that gets you into trouble? When you lie under oath, why then, sooner or later, that's going to come out. And this is called perjury. And the one who perjures himself or who lies will not escape the punishment. Have an interesting case that I'll close with, and this may sound like fiction, but it's actually a true story. I had a young girl in my class that would tell a lie when telling the truth would be so much easier. But she had just gotten in the habit of fabricating things and changing them about. And one day in private, I said, "Look, how can you live with yourself telling so many lies?" And she said, "Oh, that doesn't bother me." She said, "I can just blink my eyes 3 times and forget about anything I want to." And so I just blink and forget it. I said, "Well, now one of these days, you're going to have children, and how are you going to teach them not to lie?" Well, she didn't say anything. About 8 years went by, and she came to my office, had with her 2 cute little girls. I believe 1 was 5, 1 was 3. And I said, "Oh, those are pretty little girls you have." And she said, "Yes, they're good girls too, but I can't tell when they're telling me the truth." And I guess she didn't remember that time we had a little discussion about that. But if you are a liar, it's going to catch up with you. You're going to pass it up. You can't lie before God. Well, bell's going to ring in a minute, and I'm... No, 5 seconds, I should have said. Good to have you here this morning, and next time we'll go on chapter 21. And I don't really want to go into 22 until I take the whole time on that, because it's something that I get a little emotional over. But God, good to have you. God bless you. Have a good week. See you next week.